Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for March 7th, 2008. This week, we're talking about the brain. What can math and computers tell us about it? What happens to the brains of jazz musicians when they're jamming? And to start things off, Suzanne tells us why a mathematician is studying hallucinations.
Well, his name is Jack Cowan, and he's at the University of Chicago. He says the images people see when they hallucinate may actually be the structure of their own brains.
Wait, my brain has the structure of a pink elephant?
Well, maybe yours does. But he says that most people's visual hallucinations actually resemble just four basic geometric patterns. They form when the brain's visual cortex is disturbed or becomes unstable.
It's obviously something that's fundamental to the architecture of the brain that causes people to see these kinds of images, things like tunnels and funnels and spirals and honeycomb patterns and cobwebs and the like. And the brain basically makes the patterns when it goes unstable for various reasons.
He says the neural connections in the brain's visual cortex have a strip-like crystalline structure. The spherical retina of the eye twists this structure into the four basic geometric patterns we perceive as hallucinations. And we've been having these visions for a long time.
All kinds of stuff generate hallucinatory images, and people have obviously been seeing these images for at least 20,000 years, because if you look at rock art and cave paintings, you can see the imagery there as well.
He says those ancient artists probably painted what they saw.
They would go into dark caves. Now, you go and lie in a dark cave, and eventually a lot of people will start seeing things. And what is it they see? They see this kind of imagery.
Cowan's work is just one example of how mathematical modeling can be applied to brain research.
Thanks, Suzanne. I will never look at my hallucinations the same way again.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
Well, computers may not have brains or the ability to feel, at least not yet. But this week, we talked to some researchers who are trying to get computers to regret their actions. It's not as weird as it sounds. Italian economists Massimo Vaglian of the University of Venice and David Marchiori of the University of Trento are working with well-established computer models of decision-making and competition. But they added an extra ingredient, the ability to recognize lost opportunities in hindsight.
The amount of regret is really how much you have missed in terms of missed opportunities or missed payoff by not doing what would have been, in retrospect, the right thing to do.
And the greater the regret, the greater the impact it had on the computer's future decisions. Vaglian says that with this adjustment, the models behaved much more like actual humans.
Thanks, Bob. Now all they need to do is add guilt.
Yeah, and remorse and self-loathing. It sounds like something out of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Speaking of which, you've got a story that sounds kind of science fiction-y. Diagnosing mental illness by measuring brain waves?
That's right. And scientists measure these waves in hertz, which is the frequency or rate at which they're emitted every second. Nancy Capel is a mathematician at Boston University who studies these waves. She says that when most people listen to clicks through headphones at a frequency of 40 hertz, the primary auditory cortex of the brain produces electrical activity of 40 hertz.
Which is no big surprise, since that's what you put in. But if you do the same thing to a person with schizophrenia, out will come a mixture of 20 hertz and 40 hertz.
She says that it's not yet known whether schizophrenics who take medication would respond like other people. And she adds that every mental illness probably changes the frequency of brainwaves during sensory processing.
Thanks, Suzanne. In our final brain story this week, a new study by scientists at Johns Hopkins may shed some light on just how jazz musicians improvise on the fly. Using functional magnetic resonance imaging, or fMRI, they looked at the brain's activity while jazz pianists improvised tunes. To control the experiment, the musicians also played a tune they had memorized. It turns out that the act of improvisation causes the activity of a region of the brain called the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex to slow down. This area of the brain plays an important role in our short-term memory and also in pre-planning what we're going to do next. The researchers think that when this region of the brain slows down, the musicians become less inhibited and less likely to censor themselves, both of which are conducive to improvisation.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you're taking improv classes, aren't you? I suspect you're learning to stifle your dorsolateral prefrontal cortex as well, right?
Yep, I just turn that puppy off and not even I know what I'll do or say next.
Ooh, we are going to have to find a way to work that into one of our podcasts. But for now, that's our show for this week. Next week, we'll take a journey into the past and learn why archaeologists have to dig so deep to find what they're looking for. And we'll tell you how modern technology is shedding light on ancient art. Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition. We dig up an astonishing new science story every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website or at iTunes. And if you have a nagging science question you'd like us to answer, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, you'll win a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.